Welcome to the podcast version of Police Science Doctor, the online resource bridging the gap between research and investigative practice, for police personnel who go the extra mile, for academics who want to connect better with investigative practitioners, on YouTube and on policesciencedoctor.com.
Hello and good evening, everyone. This is Suzanne Knabe-Nicole from Police Science Doctor. Police Science Doctor is the online resource for policing, where research from academic journals is translated into podcasts and videos. So something consumable. And also, if you're on the free Police Science Doctor email list, you will get Police Science snippets emailed to you every Tuesday. And these are the ones that I'm going to be discussing this evening as well, to see what they mean and what you can do with them. Now, before I get to that, I just have a few announcements. So this Thursday, 2 days from now, actually 48 hours from now, if that is 2 days, it is 2 days, I'm going to be doing a live interview with Professor Jason Roche from Huddersfield University in the UK. Now, what we're going to be talking about is self-selection policing, as he calls it. So I've called this here, how to identify serious offenders without knowing their serious offenses. Now, there is a phenomenon that Jason has noticed in which people that the police catch for minor offenses, some of them tend to commit bigger offenses. So the very serious offenders are quite likely to also be committing very minor offenses. Not all minor offenders commit serious offenses, but serious offenders, mainly all of them, commit minor offenses. Now, there have been cases where, for example, the Yorkshire Ripper, he first came to police attention not because he was killing all these women, and I think he was, I don't know if he was raping them, but he was quite, you know, definitely sexually assaulting them and killing them, but he was caught because he was pulled over by a traffic cop. So people who have a major disregard for the law on a big scale also have a disregard for the law on a small scale. So it would be very wise for them to make sure they don't get caught for anything small, but they are not that wise, unfortunately for them, fortunately for policing. So that's what we're going to be talking about Thursday. The thing he calls it is self-selection policing, how to identify serious offenders without knowing their serious offenses. Okay, so that's something we're going to be talking about on Thursday. Then the other thing I wanted to tell you about is the conference that's coming up next week now, so only 9 days to go. So as you saw, there's this free conference coming up. If you haven't heard about it, it's an introduction basically to everyone on behavioral science in policing. The link here is where you actually register for it. So I know there's a LinkedIn post on there or LinkedIn event, and hundreds of people have said, yes, I'm going to that event and clicked on the LinkedIn post, but that doesn't actually really register for you the actual event. To register for the actual event, you need to go here to policesciencedoctor.com/RFC for Rapid Fire Conference. Now, there's a few reasons why it would be good for you to register through that link. One is you get the exact stream link. So this will be streamed live and you will get the exact stream links emailed to you if you actually registered, because then I can contact you directly. Two, you will be given a specific offer at the event that was only going to be available at that rate for people who have actually registered. Three, you're going to be able to get a certificate of attendance for, you know, CPD event, for your continued professional development, to show that you've actually been doing this extra development of your skills and of your education that is work related. And also, you will be automatically added to the email list, which means that every time a new video comes out, every time a new announcement is there, you're going to be the first one, the first ones to hear about it, and you'll get the access to the read page on policesciencedoctor.com, which is password protected, and only people on the email list can get that password. Now, the read page has the transcripts of all the videos in the Police Science Doctor video gallery. I think there's 28 now. And it also has all the police science snippets. So they're all PDF files. You can download them if you want. You can build up a library. So it's something you can look up and keep if you want. So policesciencedoctor.com RFC. That is for the conference. Let me see if I've got an image of that here. So just as a reminder of what's in store for you. So that's next week, Thursday. I hope you're all going to be there. About 1,000 people have registered for this already. Media partners are Policing Insight magazine And so that's really exciting. And yeah, so let's see how that all goes. It's the first time I'm doing a free, a live conference. It's free because I want everyone to have access to this. And it's a variety of topics, and you can then see, you know, which ones of these are of more interest to you. Which ones do you want to learn about more? Right, so I've talked about the conference. I've talked about this here conference. I've talked about this here interview. Now, those who are paying attention, you may have noticed that Jason Roach, this guy, he was also listed on the trailer and on the list for here. He is going to be at the conference as well. He's going to be talking about how to prevent police, how to prevent crime using the psychology of influence. So that's what we're going to do. That's what he's covering in the conference next week. But the interview two days from now is going to be on self-selection policing. So he's got a lot of things to talk about. Shall we get to the police sign snippets for this week then? As usual, I have three. So these police sign snippets are basically golden nuggets I've pulled out from academic research articles. You know, one of the main things that Police Science Doctor does is taking research that you as a law enforcement practitioner don't usually have access to because you don't have a subscription to, you know, the publisher that publishes that research. Academics publish lots of research. They want to make it available, but it's mainly only available to students and other academics. Now, I believe it should actually get to you, the law enforcement practitioner, who's going to be using all that information. So because I know you don't usually have access to these, and if you had access, you wouldn't be trawling through hundreds of research articles to see what's relevant for you. What I do is I do that work for you. I go through research articles. I extract something that I would consider a golden nugget, and it's always very practical and applied. So I don't give you anything theoretical that you can't really do anything with. It's something you can action straight away. It's something you can think about straight away, how you could apply it to your own work, to your own investigations, whatever your work may be. It's something that's very practical, applicable, and of use. So the first one I have is about stranger rape cases. We know that stranger rapes are the minority. Most rapes are committed in some kind of relationship, either an intimate partner relationship or an acquaintance or family context. But this is about stranger rape cases. And it's about prioritizing the suspects in stranger rape cases, because if somebody was raped by a stranger, maybe it happened outdoors, you know, every male, you know, just to put it very crudely, could be a suspect. But you need to start somewhere, so you need a starting point. That's why you prioritize where you start, with whom you start. How do you select that? So this snippet is saying approximately 85% of stranger rapists have a criminal record. Now, what does that mean? That means he's probably in a police database. He's probably in the police database with his name, date of birth, and address. Now, that's pretty cool stuff. So he's probably in a police database already. 85% of them are. So you just now need to identify them. Ascertaining from his offense behavior whether he has previous convictions for burglary, violent offending, and whether he's experienced or this was his first offense can assist in prioritizing suspect lists. Now, how would you know if he may have a previous conviction for burglary? Well, there was a case I heard about where a rapist was walking through a town and it was dark. And he walked past a house, and where there was a woman by herself in the ground floor, on the ground floor, and he was obviously of a mind to be an offender already. So it's not, you know, it's not a law-abiding moral person who was walking past, and then, you know, suddenly has decided to become a rapist. But he actually took the opportunity. He broke into her house and he raped her. There was a stranger offense. It was in the victim's home, and the thing here is that it takes a certain person to break into somebody's home to feel comfortable enough to do that. Now, if you are a normal person who doesn't do that, you would have a lot of mental resistance from going onto someone's property. Someone who's done that before has gotten rid of that resistance, has shaved it right off, has cut it right down. So in this case, he was actually located by a clued up analyst who was not necessarily looking for a rapist in the database, but was looking for someone with a conviction for burglary. And there was another case I heard of where there was a young child having a bath on the ground floor. Somebody drove past, saw their child, broke in, kidnapped the child, raped her, and threw her out of the van. And actually, that was the case where the analyst thought, well, hang on, okay, so who would do that kind of thing? Somebody who's comfortable breaking into home. I mean, the child's mother was in the house, but you know, she couldn't get to the child quickly enough to prevent her from being abducted. So it was actually in that case that the analyst looked for previous burglary convictions. Violent offending, you know, how would you determine that somebody has convictions for violent offending? That's, again, you need to look at the crime scene behavior and whether he's experienced or not. You know, is this his first rape? Is it not his first rape? You know, how much risk did he take? How much preparation was there? How much competence in committing the offense was exhibited? And this is what you then use to prioritize your offenders. So your suspects, sorry. So if the person actually did break into somebody's property to commit a rape, then do seriously consider people with burglary. So rapists are generally criminal. So they're not just committing sexual offenses, they are generally criminal. So make sure you don't exclude people who do not have convictions for rape. It is quite difficult to get a conviction for rape, unfortunately. So make sure you consider all the spectrum of offenses. So that was about prioritizing suspects in stranger rape cases. The second science snippet is about policing crowds. Research has shown that crowd management strategies based on outdated or classical theoretical assumptions of crowd irrationality may be counterproductive because they may create public disorder. So when the police and the authorities deal with a crowd, maybe at a football event, maybe at a demonstration, at a protest march, whatever it may be, but when they deal with the crowd, you know, assuming and expecting them to be irrational, to be potentially violent, you know, it's like, oh, it's just a matter of time before something kicks off. This attitude from the police and the authorities can actually trigger disorder. So it's not necessarily coming from the crowd. It can actually be, you know, kindled by the actual authorities and the police. Now, a much better way of policing crowds is to be very careful with planning of the event, you know, be involved with the organizers of the event and come to some negotiation and agreements on what are you here to do, what is it you're wanting to do, when and where, and then expect the organization to take some responsibility for the behavior of the people who are going to be joining the march or the event. And this, treating the organization and the crowds as reasonable people, because most of them are. And if there's going to be some trouble, it's going to be caused usually by a very small minority. But if you treat everyone, you know, with this negative, hostile attitude from the police, you can actually incite something that wouldn't necessarily maybe have taken place. So the link to the whole document is actually in this for this crowd policing one. And the third one is self-selection policing. Now, does that ring a bell? That's what we're going to be talking about on Thursday with Professor Jason Roach. People who continue to drive whilst disqualified are the most likely group of serious driving offenders to be involved in a wide array of different types of offending and at rates more consistent with mainstream criminals than those who simply commit other driving-related offenses. Again, the whole document is here. So if you are a hardened criminal and you're disqualified from driving for whatever reason, maybe you're not going to stick to that disqualification. Maybe you're going to drive anyway because you make decisions anyway that are in your interest, not in society's interest. Now, not everyone who's disqualified for driving is also a more serious offender, but many serious offenders also commit those minor offenses, which are obviously more easy to detect. So in a way, the way I described it is they're almost raising their hand and letting the police know that they are criminals. Even if a small one, you know, it's a small minor offense that they're raising their hand for, when you dig deeper, like with a Yorkshire Ripper, it turns out there's something much more serious going on in the background as well. Now, if they were just sticking to these, the smaller expectations, if they weren't breaking any of the minor offending, or if they weren't committing any minor offenses and thereby coming to the police, to police attention, they wouldn't be caught as often for the more serious offenses. So we'll speak to Jason about that, but I assume that's why he calls it self-selection policing. So I'll speak about that on Thursday. I hope you enjoyed these science snippets. If you do, please let me know in the comments. Please email me what you thought of them. And also, If you are a student, if you are a lecturer, if you have access to police research, criminology research, investigative psychology, forensic psychology, anything that is relevant to the field of policing, anything that you think a law enforcement professional may find of interest, please email me the snippet, because I don't have that many. I don't have access to these subscription-based articles either, you know, so I'm really scraping every week to try and find them for you. I'd be very grateful if some students and academics who are reading through tons of research all the time anyway, if you could please email me some of them. Some people have done that already, and you will have seen I credit them in the science snippet. You know, I thank them, and I tell, you know, and I also quote where they study, what they're studying, or, you know, which university they are with. So if you have any police science snippets to contribute, and the, remember the criterion to be included is that it has to be actionable and practical, please send them to me. So the email address is contact@policesciencedoctor.com. And get yourself on the email list if you aren't already, because you get lots of perks that people not on the email list do not get. So again, register for the conference next week, Thursday, policesciencedoctor.com/RFC for Rapid Fire. And then just one small glimpse as well. In May, the Police Science Doctor Academy is launching its first feature length course. It's going to be on mental health in policing. It's going to be on stress. It's called Emergency Stress Pit Stop. Because as a police officer, sometimes you just have to pull over to get refueled, to have your tires checked, to have your shock absorbers replaced, to have your brake pads replaced, because you need to get back in the race and you need to be fighting fit. You need to be on full form. So the first course is about handling stress in the police. And actually in May, just a little sneak peek, there's going to be a mental health webinar that I'm organizing, mental health and policing. Probably going to be subtitled something like global problem, global solutions. So I will keep you updated though. Definitely if you're on the email list, you will get all the information about that, links and information and everything. But keep your eyes out peeled for that. So just to make you aware again, there's going to be a mental health issue coming up, because mental health has never been more critical in policing than now. Police officers are more likely to die from suicide than from working on duty. Apparently 75% divorce rate in the police. Somebody I spoke to said that police officers are actually not very good at relationships, because they see people, you know, in their day-to-day life, they see people in their worst moments in life, and then, you know, they're supposed to switch off and go back home to their partners, who have no idea what they've been dealing with all day, and that partner just doesn't get it. And it's true, they don't get it, but it's not their job to get it. They have a different job that is having, you know, putting their own pressures on them. So there's so much police have to deal with, and there is not nearly enough support for mental health. And I was speaking to someone today, that interview will come out later, who was saying that when you join the police, there's fitness tests, there's 6 monthly fitness training, personal safety training you do. You would never send out, no police agency, you know, that I'm aware of, would send out an officer without a stab vest, without police boots, without the equipment they need to physically protect themselves. But we're sending them out without any mental protection. We're not telling our young recruits or our seasoned officers how to protect themselves from stress. They're 5 times more likely to develop PTSD than the normal population, and we're not teaching them anything on how to deal with this. There are pockets of, you know, great practice here and there, but there's nothing standardized across UK policing, and as far as I'm aware, across any other police agency either in the world. So big, massive topic. And I've been amazed, you know, just with the initial work I've been doing on planning this webinar, how great the interest is in this. I have a comment here from Chant Dot on YouTube. Another great video. Thank you for sharing these snippets. Thank you very much, Chant. I'm happy that you're enjoying them. And I know Chant is an MSc investigative psychology student. And again, Chant, if you have any snippets to share, please do. He's already done that once. So thanks very much for that. Tell your colleagues, tell your fellow students to send me stuff as well. And glad you're enjoying them. And I hope you can get much more use out of them in the future every week, and I'll be seeing you guys soon. Bye bye now.
Thank you for listening. I hope you found this content useful.
You can get access to each episode's transcript with key learning points, timestamps, and references if you get yourself onto my mailing list.
just go to the main website on policesciencedoctor.com, and on the bottom of each page you will find a sign-up form for notifications of new content. Just enter your first name, your preferred email address, and the type of organization you work for. You will not get any spam. This is just for me to let you know about new content and for you to get access to all the transcripts.